Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Thursday, the 16th of March, 2023. Glad to have you along, Mr. Aaron Zommers, Wisconsin's number one way to start your day here on the Albaugh Show and on Civic Media proper. Mr. Zommers, we have made it to hour number two.
That we have.
Big
and it occurs to me now that I think yesterday might have been the first time that we've had a Wednesday on this show, and I did not play the Hump Day Camel clip.
Oh, really? Well, we'll probably have to wait another week, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not Hump Day today, but yes, all right, fine. We'll make up, we'll have extra Hump Day Camel sounds next Wednesday. Look forward to that with nervous anticipation. Here is the question this hour, and we're going to get into this a little bit with Reed Galen. Is Wisconsin ready to elect an insurrectionist? Because that's what Dan Kelly essentially is. He participated in the insurrection by accepting over $100,000 in money for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and the state Republican Party. And now he is running to get back onto the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. He accepted that $100,000 in money from the Republican Party in order to advise the people who had the alternate slate of electors, who then wanted to give that to Wisconsin U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who was then supposed to give it to then Vice President Mike Pence, an alternate set of electors for Wisconsin, which would have stolen Wisconsin's electoral votes away from you and I, the voters, who duly elected Joe Biden, and would have handed it to the Trumpster. That's insurrection. He participated in it. Dan Kelly did. Now he wants to be on the state Supreme Court. Is Wisconsin ready to elect an insurrectionist to the state Supreme Court? Coming up in just a couple of minutes at 9:15 after the break, Reed Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project, also of the Union, on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race. They are doing a Get Out the Vote event today and also on Saturday in Milwaukee, today in Madison, and then Saturday in Milwaukee. Along with the Souls to the Polls folks in Milwaukee, we'll tell you all about it. Get Reed Galen's take. Also on the state of politics in Wisconsin. Interesting guy. Worked for former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger of California, who incidentally actually got maps changed out in California. We'll talk to Reed about that. Stay with us at quarter after the hour after the break. And then coming up in hour three, it is only going to get better. As goes Wisconsin host Kristen Bry and Jane Matinere in the studio live, just like Chad Holmes this morning. It is just, Chad's right. We need a couch here. Just bring the guests out, have a cocktail in your hand, maybe a little early for a cocktail, but just sit and chat.
You could make it a mimosa.
Yeah, we could do that.
And also, I don't know how recently you've been to the new studio, but in the studio, there are couches.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. But I can't lay down. I'll take a nap.
Yeah, I'll have to cover for you.
Yes, you will. Here's your weather forecast for this morning around the state of Wisconsin. First of all, the driftless area, southwest Wisconsin, WRCE. News from the center in Richland Center. Your forecast for today from weatherology meteorologist Kara Foster. For today, it looks like a rain and a mixed precipitation, maybe half an inch of total heavy wet snow, a little ice, not fun at all, a high of 44. Then for tonight, those kind of blustery conditions continue, some rain and snow. Again, only about a half inch total accumulation, so not a lot's going to build up. It's just going to be nasty, a low of 20. And then for tomorrow, Friday, mostly cloudy, blustery, a high of 28 degrees. Forecast for Wausau, WXCO, Bull Falls radio area. Expect blustery conditions there as well. Patchy fog, rain and snow, a high of 41. For tonight, rain, snow and fog continue, a low of 18, maybe up to 2 inches of snow possible by the time all is said and done on Friday as those conditions continue into Friday. Rain and snow, blustery, a high of 21. So again, 2, maybe 3 inches on the upper side around the Wausau area. Meanwhile, WLAK Amory Winter weather advisories out there. Rain and a wintry mix and breezy conditions. Lots of wind up in Amory this week. High of 40 degrees today, then falling throughout the day. Wintry conditions tonight, maybe 3 to 3.5 inches of snow in Amory. A total accumulation, heavy wet snow, a low of 13. And then for tomorrow, Friday, blustery, patchy, blowing snow, and a chance of snow later on, and a high of 19. So between this afternoon through Friday, just, again, not a huge amount of new accumulation, but it's going to be heavy, wet snow and a mix of kind of ice and rain that comes in across the state with this. So be aware of that. Things you need to know, headlines for you this morning. Aaron Rodgers. The Aaron Rodgers era is over in Green Bay. Almost, that is. A new era for the four-time MVP will begin in New York soon, according to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Rodgers confirmed it all yesterday in an interview on the Pat McAfee Show, telling the host that after a long contemplation and meeting with Jets officials last week, Rodgers decided last Friday to, quote, play and play for the New York Jets.
And the public response has been overwhelming.
They don't care.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. That's fine. However, Rodgers said that no deal has been made and that the Packers are the ones holding up the trade, not him, as has been speculated on social media and some news reports. Stay tuned. We shall see. Republicans. They can't even do messaging on abortion well. Yesterday, a group of Republican lawmakers led by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss announced an abortion bill allowing exceptions to rape or incest, but his counterpart in the Senate said we're not taking it up. We'll come back with Reed Galen and the Supreme Court race after this. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hum, dum, dum-a-dee-dum, dum. Oh, the wind is lashing lustily, and the trees are thrashing thrustily, and the leaves are rustling gustily. So it's rather safe to say that it seems that it may turn out to be fields, that it will undoubtedly looks like a rather blustery day today.
Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It took a while to get there, but we got there. It's a blustery day, indeed. What's that from? Is that from a musical?
It is. Winnie the Pooh.
It's, oh, my goodness, yeah, gracious.
Every time someone says the word blustery, I can only think of Winnie the Pooh.
Well, all right. That's very good. So the forecast for today, blustery conditions across the state of Wisconsin. And be aware of that. We'll keep you up to date. Looks like, again, as far as snow totals go, not really high, except for maybe in Amory, 3.5 inches of snow. So we'll see how that goes. But otherwise, it's going to be kind of nasty across the state of Wisconsin. But as Kara said, blustery winds roaring out of the northwest, I believe. So batten down the hatches and be prepared for that. We are waiting for Reed Galen from the Lincoln Project to call in. He will be joining us here shortly as soon as we can connect with him and talking a little bit about the state Supreme Court race. Interesting deal, as we said right before the break. Here's what the setup is. And I only wish that Matt Flynn had stayed overnight. Of course, host of the Matt Flynn Direct Show every afternoon. Mr. Zomers, imagine this. We had to do like a small group breakout yesterday, and here was my group. I had Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Show, Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct, and Luke Mathers of Dueling Tangents, and me.
What a group.
I mean I was nonstop laughter because it was just listening to Earl and Matt Flynn. It was fantastic.
I'm sure that's amazing. The two of them bantering.
And also I was able to prod Matt into saying my favorite Matt Flynn. I said, Matt, what happens? How does it happen? I said, how does fascism start? And he said, it creeps into little cat's feet. And he's exactly right, of course. That's how one of Matt's catchphrases he likes to explain to you, and he's absolutely right about this. Fascism creeps in a little cat's feet. So to see him in the flesh and to hear that was fantastic. Also, this was very revealing. We had to pick out if our company was a superhero, what would we be? And there was a big discussion because Matt and Earl wanted to be Superman, and Mr. Mathers wanted to be Captain America. And so I broke the tie kind of. I said truth, justice, and the American way, Superman. So that's what happened.
Yeah, Superman's so boring though.
Well, we're going to talk more about our retreat with Krista and Jane in there on the first hour of their show, As Goes Wisconsin, at 11. So we shall see about that. Reed Galen, very interesting guy. He is the co-founder and a board member on the Lincoln Project. More than 20 years of experience, Reed has spent more than a decade advising Fortune 50, 100, and 1,000 companies in need of high-level counseling. Also, managed several high-profile ballot measures in California, Texas, and Colorado. He served as the deputy campaign manager for John McCain's presidential campaign and deputy campaign manager for Arnold Schwarzenegger's successful 2006 re-election, and served as an advisor in 2000 and 2004 on the campaigns of President George W. Bush. Between the campaigns, Galen spent a year at the White House and served as the Bush in the Bush administration at both the Department of Treasury and the Department of Homeland Security. We are joined by Reed Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project and board member now. Reed, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate you to come on the show.
No, thanks for having me. And that that rundown makes me feel very old. So
you're younger than me. You're younger than me. So you're just a young guy.
Yeah, I feel. Sometimes it feels like Groundhog Day.
That's true. And you come from a family of kind of political strategists. Your dad also advisor to the president's extraordinaire as well.
Yeah, my dad. I grew up. You know, most kids went to summer camp. I got to go to Capitol Hill, which probably explains why I turned out the way I did.
But see, that's fantastic. I mean, what? How old were you when you got involved? Like, really? Like, did you, your first door to door yard signs?
I would say this. It's probably not so much yard signs as the first year that I won the NFL playoff football pool at the Republican National Committee in 1983 when I was seven.
Seven, wow.
I chose the then Washington Redskins and then Los Angeles Raiders, and everybody in the building went crazy. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was my first memory in politics. But, yeah, look, you know, starting, you know, yeah, before I was 10, and, you know, by the time I was 16, I was, you know, a brand new driver driving the first lady's chief of staff around Houston in 1992 at the convention there, which they gave me a brand new car to drive, and I probably had to go to a scrapyard when it was done, considering how bad a driver I was.
See, this is fascinating. Now, we've had Rick Wilson, the other co-founder of the Lincoln Project, on, and last week you were feeling under the weather. I hope you're feeling better. And we had and one of your assistants called and said, you know, would it be okay if Stuart Stevens came on instead of Reed? And I said, yes, because I've actually read his book. That'd be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So Stuart was great.
Look, you know, when you read Rick and Stuart, you really get to know them. Rick writes from the gut, mm-hmm. right? Like, it comes right out of his insides. And Stuart writes in poetry.
Right.
I can't do either of those things very well. But, yeah, it's great to have guys like that. You know, I mean, I remember Stuart from one of the first campaigns I worked on. He was our media guy in 1998. I think I was 22. And, you know, I've known these guys most of my adult life. And so it's a pretty incredible thing to be able to work with them on a daily basis now.
Well, I want to talk just a little bit about before we kind of get into the meat and potatoes of the Supreme Court race in Wisconsin, because I got involved when I was 12 in 1980, working on going door to door and doing yard signs, for Ronald Reagan. And at the time, Bob Caston, who ran for U.S. Senate in Wisconsin, and Steve Gunderson, who ran in the House, all three Republicans. And I thought, well, this is great. This is easy. And, you know, it drew me in. And so when I read Stuart's book, you know, it was all a lie, how the Republican Party became Donald Trump. And I left the Republican Party in 2011 over witnessing a closed caucus where Republicans were all giddy about taking voting rights away. That's what broke was the straw that broke my back and left the Republican Party. But it was cathartic for me. So we've talked to Rick, we've talked to Stuart about their journeys. Give us 2 or 3 minutes. You know, how did you begin? I guess you've told us a little bit, but how were you drawn into this? And then what was it for you that made you say, I can't do this anymore, and left the party?
Sure. Well, yes, again, so, you know, when you grow up as the kid of a consultant or an operative, right, it's campaign season all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so you see probably too much of the mechanical pieces of politics and not enough of the ideological. And so I was, you know, there used to be a time, not anymore, where you could be a Republican, you could be a conservative, or you could be a conservative Republican, mm-hmm. right? And I was a Republican. I've never been a conservative in my life. You know, I'm probably more conservative than your average Democrat, but, you know, again, not a dyed-in-the-wool sort of social conservative or right. anything like that. I guess there was a term it would have been moderate or rhino, I guess is probably how I would have been called it. And so, you know, there were always parts of the Republican Party that made me uncomfortable, especially on the social stuff, just because that's not where I was.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we progressed towards, you know, Donald Trump, you know, look, I worked for George W. Bush, not only when he was, you know, running for president, but also I started my first real job in politics for a major candidate was George W. Bush in 1997, right? He was still a first-term governor in Texas.
Sure.
And this was a guy who was Mr. Domestic Policy. We tend to forget that because of 9/11 and everything that came after, but this was Mr. Education, immigration, right? All of the sorts of things that he was, you know, prior to 9/11. Remember, his first big piece of legislation was No Child Left Behind. However you feel about that piece of legislation, education, it was a massive domestic policy thing for a Republican president, which was pretty unusual.
Right.
And so when Trump came on the scene, I thought he was a joke just like everybody else, right? And I thought that, you know, Mitt Romney, right, was sort of who we were, you know, like in 2012, and that those big states would save us,
right,
would save the party. And what I got wrong, and like so many people got wrong, was that we were always on the short end of the stick as far as, quote unquote, the establishment was concerned. The inmates always ran the asylum. They just let us believe we were running it.
Right.
And by the time Trump comes in with the, you know, I mean, Rick and I wrote a piece the other day about all, like, the five or six things that Donald Trump did in the, you know, in the first 6 months of his campaign in 2015 that would have been absolutely disqualifying for anybody else. But every time he did them, his numbers only went up.
Right.
And so by December, I was working on a project where I already knew, based on some massive survey we were doing nationally, that Trump was going to be the nominee. It was going to be Trump versus Hillary. And so I started to turn away. And then once he was officially the nominee, I was out. I said, if this is what the Republican Party wants, forget it. I'm not an atavist. I'm not an anti-immigration guy. I'm half Jewish, so I'm barely a white Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so for me, you know, I was especially after living in California for 10 years, I wasn't a very good Republican anyway, because working for Arnold and everybody else in a state like that, dominated by Democrats, you had to make a choice, which was, am I going to be like the otherwise normal human being in the room, or am I going to be some nut, right, that gets into bar fights at the twice annual, you know, GOP convention, which is what those guys did, and they still do to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, after that, it was, it wasn't just that I had left the party. It was pretty quickly thereafter, after he won, I was in a very dark place. And I said, I think the party's gone. And, you know, Rick and I would go to these meetings, as he might have mentioned to you, in Washington, D.C., with these very earnest Republicans, right, people that we're friends with, and said they thought they could separate Trump and the party. They thought it was two separate things. And we said, they're not two separate things. He owns the deal. And even now, right, almost 8 years on, you still see this magical thinking by whether or not it's the donor class, the sort of National Review, I guess what passes for intelligentsia, the right. media. They all desperately want the Trump era to be over. And what they don't understand is that it's still very much alive.
It really is. And you mentioned George W. Bush. I voted for him twice, had the honor to meet him twice. Here's my entire conversation with the former president. I met him once when he was running for president, and I said, "Mr. Governor Bush, thanks for taking a stand on your faith." And he had passed me by, and he comes back, he looks at me in the eye, and he goes, "There you go." And then he also came to Richland Center, my hometown, when I helped coordinate his presidential visit in 2004. And I simply said, "Mr. President, thanks for coming." And he said, "Sure." There's my entire conversation with George W. Bush in my entire lifetime. Yeah. But I've said this to other people.
My conversations with the president were typically, how could you let, because I was an advance man,
sure,
right, at the White House.
Right.
How could you let something like that happen? You should know better.
Right.
Right. Stuff like that.
Well, I found him, and we have to take a break when I come back and talk to you about this. I've said this. No matter how you feel about George W. Bush, my sense was he was someone who truly believed. He knew what he believed, and he stuck to it. And I said, whether it was George W. Bush or Barack Obama, I would vote for either one of them for a third term because I find them similar in that they know themselves and they're true to their convictions, and what you see is what you get. And I can deal with someone like that, even if I don't agree with them 100% of the time. I can deal with a person who knows themselves and who has honor and who will stick with their word rather than someone who's just a pathological liar.
Absolutely, 100%.
So we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Reid's time with President Bush. Also, very interesting that you spent time with former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, a guy who actually got fair maps done. I want to hear about that. And speaking of fair maps, it's a huge issue in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race. Reid is part of this rally going on in Wisconsin. We'll talk to him about that. Stay with us. This is the Todd Allbaugh Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
That it may turn out to be feels, that it will undoubtedly looks like a rather blustery day. The end, everybody inside.
Get along down the road, we got a long, long way to go. Scared to live, scared to die, we ain't perfect but we try.
Welcome back to the Todd Allbaugh Show. It is now 9:33 on the time and temperature sign. A little Kenny Chesney for you. Can't we all get along? That is the question that many people are asking today. Reid Galen is our guest this half hour. He is the co-founder of the Lincoln Project, also part of the union, which is doing a rally here in Wisconsin for the Supreme Court race. We'll talk about that in a minute. Before the break, Reid, talk a little bit about your time. You worked for former President George W. Bush. And, you know, I met him very, very, very briefly and just a couple of times. Mm-hmm. My former boss, State Senator Dale Schultz, ran for Congress in 2004, and the president was so gracious when he was here in Wisconsin, he let Dale ride with him on the bus for the day. And Dale came away with just this warm feeling that the guy was genuine. He was actually legit funny in private and just a lot of fun to be around, and also extremely competent and was taking phone calls those that he could in front of my boss. And my boss just came away thinking, you know, the public doesn't really know the real George W. Bush. He was with it. He's together. He's a commander, and he's genuine. As someone who actually worked with the guy from the time he was governor until he was president, what are your takeaways that you can share with the audience?
I think that it's so much of being president of the United States now is the view that you get based on watching Saturday Night Live, right? Right. And look, you know, it was always interesting. I mean, I don't know how many different times I was backstage, you know, while he was giving a speech. And occasionally, you know, he would garble a sentence.
Right.
Right. And his critics always thought that that was an indication of stupidity. Mm. It's not easy to be president. It's not easy to stand up in front of 20,000 people. What they never understood was that that actually made him more relatable.
Right. Right. Exactly.
That,
exactly.
You know, you know, that it was that there was a human side to him. He was very funny in private. But, you know, he was also a tough boss, right, mm-hmm. to say the least. Mm-hmm. This is not a guy who, you know, didn't know anything about the presidency, right? This mm-hmm. is a guy who started working on his dad's, you know, George H.W. Bush's presidential campaign in Iowa in 1979. Watch his dad in the White House from, you know, 80 to 93, right, as vice president and president. So this was a guy who was very intimately familiar with how, you know, the presidency worked. I think he also had something that, you know, we haven't seen a lot. I mean, we see now with President Biden, but he had an absolute reverence, you know, for the office, literally and figuratively. I mean, you know, he never entered the Oval without a coat and tie on, right? It was, you know, you go back and you listen to the people that worked there, right? The Bush family, whether or not it was George and Barbara or George and Laura, right? These were people who were very kind and decent individuals. Inspired incredible loyalty among their staff, right? Mm-hmm. And you understood that you were staff, right? You worked for him, right? This was not like, you know, yeah, he could pal around, but for the most part, like, it was a business, right? Like, you got a job to do, I got a job to do. You do your job so I can go be president.
Right.
I think the one thing is, you know, he was famously derided for saying, I'm the decider. But that's what the president of the United States is, right? Like, when Harry S. Truman says the buck stops here, It's literally true, and mm-hmm. not just for the United States, but for, you know, 8.5 billion people on the planet, too. And so I think that, you know, he did take the job seriously. I think he was more competent than he was given credit for. But I think also, you know, like we saw with whether or not it was a Lyndon Johnson, right, with Vietnam, you get into a place sometimes as president where, you know, the office pulls you in directions you couldn't possibly have imagined. And then, you know, you're up against the inertia of, you know, world history. And that can be a pretty tough place to be.
It can. President Bush, again, was someone who I admired, still do. I've read his books, and a friend of mine, actually, he and his wife just got back from Dallas and went to the George W. Bush Presidential Museum and went through that, the whole decision mm-hmm. point thing. I really hope to get there someday. I have friends in Dallas. I've been there, a great city, just haven't been to the library yet. Another lawyer, former boss, says, I kind of want to move into this, how this relates to Wisconsin. Former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, another cool dude, mm-hmm. obviously, and effective, and I think people kind of maybe missed that from time to time, how effective Governor Schwarzenegger was in you know, what we hear in Wisconsin read so often now is, geez, I just want people to get stuff done. And they don't always say stuff. Sometimes they use other words. And, you know, because we're on broadcast radio and not a podcast, I won't use those words. But they just want our elected officials to get stuff done. And one of the big issues in the Supreme Court race is that if Judge Janet Protasiewicz is able to be elected, that would make it a 4-3 liberal or progressive, however you want to label it, court, which would possibly allow a lawsuit to be brought forward to challenge these gerrymandered maps in Wisconsin, which are, by any, you know, rational sense, if you apply the law as it's written and not be an activist, they were gerrymandered. They're wrong. And so there's a real hope that if Judge Janet Protasiewicz is elected, there can be a lawsuit. In California, Governor Schwarzenegger got this done without having to do a lawsuit. He just went right to the people.
Yeah, look, I mean, so again, you know, ballot measures in California are, you know, there's 5 or 10 of them every couple of years on the ballot, right? And most of them make absolutely no sense.
Right.
Most of them are pushed by one special interest or another. But the measure you're talking about was called Prop 11. I helped qualify that and helped pass it. And you knew that it was good public policy because both Republicans and Democratic leaders hated it.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. It.
But the thing about Arnold was that he, again, because, yes, he was a Republican, but he was also the most famous person on the planet.
Sure.
Right. And so he was able to sort of transcend those normal sort of political, you know, bonds of gravity that other candidates, you know, are, you know, suffer from. And so, yeah, look, California is a Democratic state. The redistricting commission there is, I believe, 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats, 3 what they call declined state, I think, or, you know, whatever, independents, for lack of a better way to put it. But the truth is that there's not that many, you know, the Republican Party has been just hemorrhaging voters, you know, and therefore it's hemorrhaging legislative and state Senate seats. And when that happens, obviously you get a more crystallized version of crazy, right? These people aren't, you know, are particularly good at legislating. But the other part about Arnold, and this brings into like a Kevin McCarthy, right? Because when Arnold was governor, Kevin McCarthy was minority leader in the California Assembly. And, you know, if Arnold and the Democratic speaker were trying to get something done, you know, they go to McCarthy and say, okay, what do you need? He's like, look, I need to get this. I know you guys are going to do whatever you're going to do, but if you guys give me 1, 2, 3 things for my guys that you don't really care about but are important to them, right, then we can make this all happen. He was the ultimate deal maker, right? Kevin McCarthy's never been an ideologue. He's always been a deal guy. He's always been a money guy, right, a hail fellow, well met. And now he's been sort of sucked into that ideological morass. But going back to Arnold, you know, it was interesting. Even when we saw this in polling is that he had this unique thing, which is even when Californians were unhappy with his job performance, they didn't dislike him personally, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And I see, I think
watch what Netflix every night, right?
Right. And I think we see that a little bit with President Biden. And I think we saw that play out electorally last year, which was even if Americans writ large weren't particularly happy with his job performance or with inflation or whatever, they didn't necessarily take it out on him personally, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And that's something we don't see much in politics anymore because, to your point, you know, in a place like Wisconsin. Yeah, I mean, the gerrymander is ridiculous, right? I mean, it's and what I think the Republicans don't understand, and we see this now happening in Texas, and I think we'll see it more in the next, you know, year or so, is that they have so gerrymandered these districts that even the guys who you might otherwise have considered pretty far to the right are now going to have somebody even crazier trying to primary them because they have so drawn these districts to within an inch of their lives that only a crazy can probably get nominated, and that gives, you know, Democrats an opportunity.
But I want to go back to your point that you made earlier, and I think you're absolutely right on this, is when it's, you knew it was the right thing to do with Governor Schwarzenegger, former Governor Schwarzenegger, and redistricting and making this nonpartisan commission to draw the maps because you ticked off both sides. And that's my point, Reed.
Right.
This is where we've come to in the United States. Unless you are an international movie star willing to put millions of dollars into your own money, that's what it takes now to overcome the partisanship in this country to actually get something done and do what the people want. And in Wisconsin, we don't have the ballot initiative, of course, but we do have the opportunity in 3 weeks here, a little under that, on April 4th, to vote for Janet Protasiewicz to possibly get fair maps in Wisconsin.
Yeah, look, and I think that's right. I mean, look, I travel the country, right, a lot, and I talk to more Democrats than I've ever talked to in my life, but I talk to a fair number of Republicans, some of whom, you know, are friends of mine or people I used to work with, and the truth is that both parties are pretty unpopular, almost as unpopular with their own members as they are with the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always talk about, you know, third parties and these sorts of things. But we shouldn't underestimate the idea that, you know, the immune response from the two-party system is pretty vigorous when you try and upset it, right? And we saw that, as you mentioned, in California. And we should expect that, you know, the Republicans in a gerrymandering case will go, you know, as crazy as they can. I think the difference for Republicans is they've always understood that gerrymandering was a means to an end, which was it was a means to power, right?
Right.
Democrats always wanted to do, you know, they wanted to be fair. They wanted to do things the right way. And I think sometimes they still suffer from that where, you know, look, I wish we were in a time of Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill having scotch
right.
in the Oval Office
right.
after a long, hard fought battle.
Yeah.
We're 40 years away from that.
Yeah.
You know, 40 years past that, we might be 40 years from it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be clear, too, is that American politics has never been beanbag. It has always been an incredibly tough, bare knuckles business, going all the way back to the founding. You know, it's been an incredibly difficult and tough way to make a living, and that's not going to end. And so, if we come back to a place post this era, right? Mm. We're in a transitional era. We're not in the post-war era anymore. I don't think we're really even in the post Cold War era anymore. We're very much in a transitional time. We have to come out of this, I think, on the pro-democracy side, you know, in a place where we can say at night, right, Republicans in Wisconsin or wherever are going to abide by the outcome of an election, and we'll say we'll get you next time like we used to. And I think that's the difference. It wasn't that these battles weren't hard fought. It was on the Wednesday after Election Day, you know, people said, you know what, like, I lost, we're going to fight again, right? Because remember, democracy does not mean you get everything you want.
Exactly.
Democracy means that you have your opportunity to make your case to your constituents, to the people of Wisconsin, to the people of the United States, about why your vision for the country is the better one. And the people will decide whether or not they agree with you based on, you know, your results or whatever. And now it's, I think, unfortunately for Republicans, democracy means, if I win, I win. If I lose, you stole it, right? And that's a very unhealthy place for us to be.
Well, you're a colleague at Lincoln Project, a friend of mine, Trigvi Olson, who we both grew up about the same age here in Wisconsin, worked in Wisconsin politics. You know, the days of, you know, Tommy Thompson and Morris Andrews, you know, two, a Republican and the head of the teachers union, they used to battle like hell, but then they could sit down, like you said, over a drink and say, okay, how can we actually find ways to help Wisconsin? How can they both actually cared about the state? Maybe they had different ways of getting there initially, but they cared about the state of Wisconsin. One of the things,
I think you make a great. First of all, I worked for Tommy briefly when
did
he was
you really?
There at HHS.
Oh my God, that's fantastic!
It was very brief and unhappy time for both of us.
really?
But,
really?
But I would say this is that you're right, which is there used to be this, and this is a really important point that you're making. there used to be a common discussion. There used to be a common set of issues that we were worried about, whatever it was, inflation, the economy, education, take your pick, right? Now we don't even, the two sides, if you want to call it that, don't even speak the same language,
right?
They're not, it's not even the same argument anymore. And you know, whether or not it's Ann Applebaum or Tim Snyder, two people who've written exclusively on this, that is one place where democracies really get into trouble, is when you have the competing interests not even talking about the same issues anymore, right? When a country can't have a common discussion, you know, that's the time when we really have to get into trouble. And maybe, if nothing else, in the next 2, 4, 6 years, is coming back to a place where we're having a common discussion about the issues we have.
Reed, can you stick with us for about 10 more minutes here?
Yeah, you bet.
All right, sounds good. I'm going to take a break. More with Reed Galen from the Lincoln Project after this. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is now 9:50. That's 10 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock. At the top of the hour, we are going to be joined by Kristen Bry and Jane Matt-Nair on the third hour of the show from As Goes Wisconsin. Going to be a great great hour in the third hour. Great guest this hour. He is Reed Galen, the co-founder of the Lincoln Project, also with the union, and had an interesting life as a Republican like myself, like Trigvi Olson, who joins us every Wednesday. Decided to leave the Republican Party and stand up for democracy. And before we took the break there, I want to make sure I give you a chance, Reed, to finish your thought there. It used to be in Wisconsin and other places, two sides, Republicans and Democrats, could find ways to talk to one another, to fight hard, fight like hell. But at the end of the day, you go down to the avenue and you say, geez, you SOB, you really got me. Let me buy you a drink and talk. And that's where a lot of work really actually got done. To your point about former President Reagan and Tip O'Neill, the House Speaker, they could fight against each other like dogs, but then share a drink together for the good of the country and get some stuff done. We just don't seem to have a lot of that happening today.
No, in less every moment, unfortunately. I mean, you think about Reagan, right? As you know, he was an icon. He was mythological for Republicans for decades, right? He barely mentioned in the Republican Party anymore.
Oh yeah,
because this was a guy who, yes, first of all, he took on the Soviet Union, right? Called it the evil empire, right? He's probably turning over in his grave in Simi Valley to see how many Republicans are now pro-Putin.
Absolutely.
This is a guy who issued an amnesty, right? A blanket amnesty in 1986. This is a guy who cut taxes massively, realized that between, you know, the reduction in revenue and, you know, increased defense spending, that the deficit was going to spiral, signed a tax increase, right? So this was a guy who was conservative, but like he also understood, like, oh, I have to, you know, I have to do right by the country writ large. Remember, he won 49 states in 1984, right? 49. And the only reason he didn't win Minnesota was because they let Mondale win his own state. Think about that, right? Like it wasn't going to be a shutout. But like, you know, there was a reason we called him the great communicator. And look, you know, every presidency is far from perfect, but, you know, the ideas that he espoused, right, about the United States being the pinnacle of democracy, being the shining city on the hill, being a leader in the world as far as individual freedom was concerned, and ultimately doing the things necessary to take down, you know, our massive opponent, the communist Soviet Union, are now, you know, they're unrecognizable in today's Republican Party, which is sad, concerning, frustrating, angering, worrying. And so now I think you see if that's how far away, right, the Republican Party of 2023 is from Ronald Reagan, you know, a generation ago, right? Living memory,
right?
I mean, you remember Reagan. I remember Reagan. Most Americans over a certain age remember Ronald Reagan's presidency. You know, it's a sad thing to see because the Republican Party used to be a governing party. It is now not a governing party. It doesn't want to govern. It wants to rule, right? It wants to win, but it has no interest whatsoever in actually solving any problems.
Speaking of a guy who just wants to win and doesn't want to solve a whole lot of problems, we have this goofball. Former Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly was appointed by former Republican Governor Scott Walker, lost spectacularly when he actually stood for election. Now he's back again as the conservative, of course, in Wisconsin. It's a nonpartisan election officially, but the conservative candidate, Dan Kelly, and he had a fundraiser last night here in Wisconsin with a guy named Scott Pressler. He is a right-wing nut job extremist who helped organize the Stop the Steal protest outside the Capitol on January 6th and called the ensuing riot, quote, the largest civil rights protest in American history. Now, Dan Kelly is also a guy that spent or accepted over $100,000 of state of Wisconsin and national GOP money to help advise in Wisconsin the alternate set of electors that wanted to steal people's vote here in Wisconsin, wanted to give it to Ron Johnson, who was supposed to give it to then-Vice President Pence, to an insurrection. This guy is an insurrectionist of Dan Kelly, and this is the choice Wisconsin voters have, Reed, coming up on April 4th, between this guy and Janet Protasiewicz.
Yeah, and look, I think that you've seen what we've seen in both 2020 and 2022 is that there are, you know, I would say somewhere between 5 and 10% of Wisconsin Republicans who understand like what that means and don't want anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so come next month, you know, I think that one of two things is going to happen. And we encourage this amongst our former Republican brethren, which is, you know, skip it or flip it, right? Mm-hmm. If you can't vote for the Democrat, just skip the race altogether, right? Mm-hmm. That takes a vote away from the Republican. If you can say, you know what, I'm interested in democracy, I'm interested in decency, I'm interested in the rule of law, vote for the Democrat this one time,
right?
And we saw that with Tony Evers, right? He got, I think he got 7% of the Republican vote.
Yep.
We saw that in 2020 where, and Ron Johnson actually admitted this on camera, Donald Trump law, there were 50,000 Republican votes in Wisconsin that didn't go to Donald Trump.
Right.
Right. Like that stayed home. That undervote is what cost him in places like Wisconsin and places like Georgia. Right. And so I think what you see is that there are a lot of Republicans, or at least enough Republicans, who are willing to say, you know what, I've had enough. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not going to be a Democrat. But in this time, I will vote for the Democrat or the more liberal candidate, because I'm not going to take any more chances with these goons who were standing outside the Capitol on January 6th. I mean, the fake elector thing is a felony.
Right.
Right.
And this is what ticks me off. Where is our Attorney General Josh Call, and where is Merrick Garland on this? We don't have time to get into it, but yeah, it's a felony. Here's a quick quote that I love from your former boss's communication director, Karen Hughes, who wrote a great book called 10 Minutes from Normal. One of my favorite quotes I tell people, Karen Hughes once said, every election comes down to a choice, and perfect's not on the ballot. I think that's so true. I mean, perfect ain't on the ballot on April 4th, but what we do have is a choice between democracy and an autocracy.
Right.
And
I think that that's the thing is, I mean, he has, you know, Kelly has made his, he has made his choice. He has decided which side of the line, pro-democracy or authoritarian, he's going to stand on. And that's the last guy you want sitting on the bench of the Supreme Court.
You have a town hall coming up, Reed. You're going to be a part of this in Milwaukee coming up this Saturday on March 18th, 10 a.m. until 12 noon. It is at St. Gabriel Church of God in Christ. That is on Milwaukee Street. You can go to jointheunion.us for more information. Souls to the Polls here in Wisconsin and Milwaukee is going to be a part of it. Left you about a minute left, but looking forward to that. You're going to be on the panel here talking a lot about democracy in this race.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, from our perspective, you know, it was an ad hoc coalition that got Joe Biden elected in 2020. It was a proto-national coalition that helped protect democracy in places like Wisconsin last year. And it's going to take all of us pro-democracy people, right, across the political spectrum, from Liz Cheney to AOC, to ensure that in the coming weeks in a place like Wisconsin and in the coming months, in a place like the United States of America, that in this moment, as I said, we lock arms and we say, this is the time when we have to protect American democracy. Let's get back to fighting about the issues that we all care about and we all believe are important. But until we fight this fight and win, right, the rest of that stuff is going to be put to the side and we'll make it happen.
Thanks, Reed Galen. We appreciate you back for more after this.
Thanks.